Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. I trust everybody had a great weekend. I, on the other hand, have been in this place of concern and worry and frustration, all because of some things that came my way in the last couple of weeks. Ever since I went on this trek to try to make a difference so that we could talk about all the things that don't work the way we have them set up, between the fact that everybody's bullied, no matter how old they are, 5 to 50, the fact that a lot of the laws that we have in place no longer fit us. We've talked about some of our judicial issues, some of our law enforcement issues. We've talked about rights, women's rights, kids' rights, the elderly rights. We've talked a lot recently about mental illness and the ramifications of mental illness and how that has kind of spiraled since the, oh gosh, we went back to the early 1800s to talk about how mental illness had affected our country, the way people were treated. And of course, all through those years, there's always been temptations. Temptations go back to as far back as you can read about. Alcoholic beverages, beers, ales, homemade moonshine. It wasn't until the 20th century that we got into chemical addictions. Why? Because the powers that be that are out there, the people that see opportunity, figured out ways to make our addictions even worse, even deeper than they were before. Now, in the year 2013, almost 2014, we have some major issues out there with addictions and dependencies. And when you talk about them, most of us try to keep them into perspective. It's young people. It's people that have no life. I mean, I hear people talk all the time. Oh, well, he's a drunk. Or, oh, well, you know, she's a pill popper. Or he's always stoned. You know, I hear those kind of things all the time about people that are supposedly those people's friends, family, what have you. Ironically, I don't know if it is ironic. It's sad more than it is anything else. It affects everyone. There was a news clipping a few weeks ago about a granny who's been selling weed out of her back room and has learned how to grow it hydroponically. I don't know whether it's called survival or whether it's called our demise. It always boils down to things like money and whether or not you can afford to live a lifestyle that you want to have. I watched a show the other night about cops that stole cocaine. It was a documentary, and would resell it back to the street people that sold the drugs. And I'm like, oh my God, what is going on with us? So we know it's out there. We don't know the depth of it unless we're involved in it. But we do see that there's a major problem. It's a major, major problem in many, many ways. So I've written something. I'm going to bring Shelley in so she can speak if she has something that she wants to say while I'm reading this. Good morning, Miss Shelley.
Well, good morning, Rainey.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
This morning, I've composed a little something that I want to read because of some things that I have been a part of my life for the past few weeks and a part of my life for my whole life, to be honest with you. But the past few weeks, I've been involved in a scenario that I wish I could make a difference in, and I really don't seem to be able to. However, I've written something, and then we're going to discuss it, and I hope that there's some people out there that may have some information that will help with this, information that is more valuable than anything I've been able to find. What do we do with our kids that are addicted to drugs and or alcohol and think that they're okay? The solutions that are available are almost barbaric. Not that I believe that you can coddle a teenager that is in denial about their drug use or their drinking. On the contrary, I am too familiar with these problems. I grew up in a time of wacky weed, iced teas, kamikazes, LSD, PCP, coke, crack, meth, just to name a few. Drugging and drinking in many circles is considered a rite to passage. Some of us make it out alive, and some of us don't. Some of us teeter on the edge for the whole duration. Some days, weeks, months, even years are good. Then, swoosh, we're right back in cesspool flats. Today, the world is very aware of the problem. However, awareness has never solved anything. Solutions solve problems, ones that are not out of reach for so many. As usual, rehab centers that are good at what they do are very costly. And in my research, I find that in most cases, you must be clean and sober to enter. Did I miss a step? I'm usually a pretty good dancer. So how do mom and dad get them to that very important first step? Well, maybe they lock them in their room, take away their shoes, their money, their phone, their bike, right? They tried that already. It was a part of this journey already, along with fights and screaming and arguing and crying. Remember, this is not a problem until it's a problem. We have the infamous Baker Act. You can do this if it is believed that they are in harm's way or a threat to someone else. Then they get treated like their jacket should tie in the back. In some cases, it might have to be so. Many years ago, addiction was deemed an illness by people much smarter than me. We usually care for our sick, right? This illness is self-inflicted. Does that put your child in a different category? Evidently. Who is responsible for the availability of all these extracurricular means of entertainment? Because that is how it begins, you know, partying. What is the harm? Everybody does a little now and then. Some make it, and some do not. Remember, we are all different, and it takes the lives of young and old every day. The irony of my little rant is that if they do make it through and grow to be middle age, get the demons under control, are blessed with loved ones that took the ride with them and stayed, sober up and are happy to be alive, then so often they reap what they sowed, cancer, heart disease, adult diabetes, and the worst thing, children that followed in their footprints. It's not the way it should be. We need the help in the very beginning, long-lasting help, the kind that makes a difference. We do not have it now. Of all the problems our world struggles through, this one should be easy to repair. But first, we must all be aware of how badly it's broken. Now, what brought me to this scenario is private, but I am going to say that I have been here before. So even though it's a private thing, a family thing for most of us to deal with, it's still right there in our faces. Every day, along with all the other terrible things that we read about every day. We see addiction. We see it on street corners. We see it in every show we watch on television. We see the money that's being made, the high life that's lived, and then the other side of that spectrum. We see the kids that are stealing and selling and hooking and doing all the things that they need to do to support a habit. If they're under the age of 18 and you're their mom and dad and you're trying to change things, you're trying to put them someplace where you know the people know what they're doing. First of all, you better have good insurance. You better have a sizable down payment. And even then, you don't know what you're getting. I went online this week and I searched and searched. And, of course, you know how the search engines work. If the company you're talking about has a really good web designer and puts up all the keywords and all the things that people put in, they get to your website first. But no matter where I looked, I just stayed in the state of Florida. But no matter where I looked, they didn't talk about taking your child when he's all goofed up. You don't know what he's taking. They don't talk about taking him in then. This is what distresses me. So what they really want you to do is take him someplace where, well, the cops picked up Joe Schmo, who's doing all kinds of stuff. Do you remember a couple years ago the guy that was doing bath salts and ate the other man's face? Those are the kind of people that get put in these tanks, in these dryout tanks, and in these baker-acted places. And that's where they're going to take your under the age of 18 child to get sober. Does that seem right in any way, in any sense? Then, when they get there, they get very little treatment. It's just about getting them detoxed. And when they're detoxing them, there's nothing like the things that Shelley and I have talked about, like good food, good water, all those kind of things. No, it's a very cut and dried situation. Get it out of your system, and then we'll deal with you. So how is this the answer? This is what has me worried and confused. And then if they leave this place, if somehow they get out, which is very possible, by the way, for them to just walk out the door, then what kind of shape are they in? And then what do the parents do if they can't find them? Where do these kids go? They go to like-minded kids and see how fast they can score, get in trouble again. So what if you're in this place and you don't know where your kid is? You don't know if they're messed up enough to really get into some serious trouble or if they're just messed up enough to be depressed and sitting someplace in a friend's house crying. That would be the lesser of all the evils. But that's not usually what happens. There's usually anger involved when you detox. Shelley and I can vouch for that, just watching people detox from coffee, for God's sakes. And cigarettes, things that aren't really good for us, but nothing like trying to get off. There's the new Molly that's on the scene, and there's all these different kinds of ecstasies and kids that are popping mom's and dad's prescriptions for Xanax bars and oxycodone and Oxycontin. And then they talk somebody, a well-meaning adult, into figuring out a way to get them Suboxone, which is another drug. This has spiraled to a place that's out of control. And the bad part about it is I don't think everybody's aware of how bad it's gotten and how there are no answers out there. That's what scares me more than anything. There are no answers out there. The only answers that there are is spend that several thousand dollars, see if your insurance covers your kid, and put them in a rehab center. But the point I'm trying to make is that there are several steps to that door. And that's where we lack, first of all, compassion for the kid and for the parents and the rest of the family. And we also lack the kind of procedures and protocol that should be governing this kind of a problem, and they're not. So, Shell, have I loaded enough out there for you to think about this morning? I've lost her. Isn't it funny how when I do this, I can't get her back on the phone? Shelly, are you there? Okay. So the point is that this is a major problem. And the point is that we're looking for answers. If anybody's got answers out there in regard to what we need to do with this, I want to hear it. I really want to hear it. I want to know what everybody thinks we should be able to do to help these kids bring themselves to a safe place again. You know, drugs and use of drugs through the years, I don't know what the statistics are. I didn't bother looking it up because I thought it would depress me too much. But I don't know what the statistics are of how many kids we lose to the world of drugs. And one night we talked about prostitution at length. And we talked about the fact that in most cases, prostitution actually puts kids into the world of drugs, or that's why they turn to prostitution, to support the habits that they've picked up. But if they're still home and they're living with mom and mom and dad love them to death, and mom and dad want to help, that's the world that we need to try to fix first, because you can't fix somebody who doesn't want to be fixed, right? But if they have family and if they have people who care, chances are there's something that can be done. There's a place that we can get them where they're going to be safe again. There's a place that we can get to that's going to give them a productive life. If you throw away everything when you're 16 or 17, what else is there? What's left? Then you have to spend the rest of your life making amends for all the mistakes you made. That's not good either. So forgiveness and moving on is what's the most important. I don't quite understand why so many kids are struggling. And when they do ask for help, there doesn't seem to be any doors of opportunity. Shelly, are you here now?
Yeah, I keep losing you. I don't hear anything being said. I called on my cell phone. The same thing happened, so I decided to call back on the home phone. I can hear you now, but you'll talk a couple minutes, and then all of a sudden I don't hear anything at all, and I'm still connected. So I don't know if anybody
strange.
Else is having that issue, but it happened to me twice now.
Well, I have a couple other listeners, but I don't really have anybody else that wants to talk. I do have a strange number that's on my dashboard that I probably can't open up. Were you able to hear my what I composed last night?
Yes.
In regard
to... Yeah, I lost
to,
maybe a minute and a half ago. Just before I hung up, I wasn't hearing anything. So I called in simultaneously on my cell. I don't know if you saw both my numbers there at the same time.
Yeah, I did.
And I had the same issue there, so I just hung up and called back on the home phone. Because I thought the home phone went out, but it wasn't because I didn't hear you on the cell either.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, you're on the home phone now, so and I hear you fine.
Yep.
The point here is that what I'm understanding... And like I said in the very beginning, if somebody has other information, I am waiting to hear what everybody has to say. But what I understand is that before a minor, or anyone for that matter, but minors is what I'm concerned about today, can go into a rehab situation. They have to be clean and sober. And sometimes that's not so easy. And the only alternative that parents appear to have, again, if I'm wrong, please somebody call me and tell me I'm wrong, but I couldn't find any place that said, you can bring your child here, we'll get them detoxed, we'll get them to a better place, and then we will refill them with the positive side of life, the positive things that they need to have in them to live a wholesome, happy life. They make those promises, but they want you to deliver them off drugs. And that seems to be one of the hardest parts. So what everybody does is they put them in, either they Baker Act them because of their behavior, or they, the police pick them up. A lot of times, the police pick them up. So the point here is we need to find out, we need to figure out, we need to work on somehow a place, a safe place, a safe house where they can dry out, where they can, you know, get their bodies clean and sober and get to a place where they can function again. And if we don't do that, then we're always going to have this same problem. And consequently, if that those steps aren't a part of the procedure, I could be wrong about this, but if those steps aren't a part of the procedure when you're in the rehab, how are they going to know how to do it the next time? If they slip and fall, which inevitably they almost always do, how are they going to know how to fix it the next time? I don't see how it's going to work. I do have a couple more people that have asked to speak. Good morning. Who am I speaking with?
Good morning, Rainey. This is Carol Ann.
Hi, Carol Ann. How are you? I thought that number looked familiar to me.
Yeah, good morning. I'm good, Rainey. Thanks for asking. Quite a topic. I guess I have a little to add, and that is that there are, I don't know if you're familiar with CARP, but I have taken people that are still inebriated, still under the influence of, alcohol and drugs, and they take them. And it isn't if they take them right there and then while they're still inebriated or under the influence of drugs. That's something that I've experienced. Personally, I've tried to help. A friend of mine has a halfway house for people that are needing all of, this kind of help. And I've just taken a few people there. It has been sometimes they don't stay. I mean, they cannot keep them there, like you said, against their will. But it is in my opinion, for Florida, it is a good place for them to dry out.
I am familiar with CARP, and yes, I have taken people there as well, but they have to walk in there of their own volition, and they have to stay until they're okay. And again, if you've got a rebellious teenager, often they won't stay. Often they don't stay. But the other part of that bothers me is the fact that it's not a real nice place either. CARP isn't.
No.
And I say that not trying to be judgmental. I say that because it just isn't. I have been there, and I have taken, in the last 15 years, I've taken probably 10 people to CARP that have come to me for help. And the nice part about it is if they ask for help. But if it gets too tough, they can just walk out the door. And you know it's going to get tough. And if you're 17, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's like you're walking around with a gun in your hand.
Right.
You know, it's like
well,
you're walking around with a gun in your
a
hand.
Couple of, Right. The couple of excuse me, women that I did take there were literally on the street in the bushes with the bottle. I mean, it was very it was a much better place to be than where they were. I can't say anything more about the facility, but that at least for a little while it was a safe place. But I'm with you on all of this. I've been listening since you started this morning, and the only thing that I really, also would always add to any kind of recovery in this area is there has to be some kind of spiritual, education, if you will, some kind of, because alcoholics and addicts are in such emotional pain, and if that's not addressed, it isn't even always about the chemical that's in them. It's how much pain they're in, and they're trying to shut that pain down. And so they use alcohol and drugs to numb that pain. And so the only thing that I've seen that really, really, truly works in a consistent way is an address to the spiritual, health and being, that human being, that education, that, time for, it might, I don't mean to sound like we don't need to do a lot for, their bodies and what they need and all, but I know that that's another, addition that could help for sure.
Well, and I agree with you. I agree that we need something in our lives that supports us, that we can believe in, that we can hold on to. I absolutely believe that. Absolutely. And
I can add to that. I think that was an excellent point to make, for the simple reason that, and I've mentioned this on the show before. That course I had taken on addictionology, and one of the things that I learned, which I did not know, by the way, and which I like saying it on the show because most people I talk to don't know it either, but for a person to be a true addict, either an alcoholic or drug addicted or substance abuse addicted, they have to have a genetic defect. I've had all sorts of traumas in my life. I smoked at one point. I never got addicted to cigarettes, and I never got addicted to alcohol, although there were times in my life that I drank alcohol because I was upset, or that I smoked. When I would get angry, I would smoke. But I could buy a pack of cigarettes and smoke, and then the next day, not smoke anymore. I didn't have an addictive personality, but that's not any kind of a commentary on my will, because I don't have the what's called the addiction gene, which is the A1 dopamine receptor. If you have that gene, you are now predisposed to addiction. And it's something the person can't turn this gene off. If they have the gene, they're predisposed. It doesn't mean they will become an alcoholic or a drug addict. What it means is that if other circumstances arise in their life that put them in that position and they do smoke or drink or whatever, they're going to become addicted to it because they have that physical predisposition. So it really has less to do with willpower and more to do with their physiology. But what Carol Ann just said, what CA just said, which is very, very, which is very true, is that one of the things that can combat that physiological defect, it's actually a birth defect, is strong emotional foundation. Things like getting into spiritual counseling or good, healthy, positive mindset counseling. The old centers that used to tear people down and then build them back up had terrible track records because that's not what these people need. These people are already torn down. That's one of the reasons they turn to drugs. And one other comment that kind of ties into what we were just talking about is that one of the reasons people become addicts, whether it be alcoholism or drugs, is because they never feel okay. Because of this genetic defect, they never feel okay with the way their life is unfolding. Even when good things happen, they don't have the normal reaction to it because they don't have the normal hormone reaction. When something good happens to somebody that doesn't have this defect, your body releases hormones, it elevates your moods. So we're really just all a big chemical factory. If you don't have the normal physiological response, you're not going to feel the normal emotions to something. And these people recognize that. They're intelligent. They see something good happen. They feel that they should feel better, and they don't. And it's very disturbing. Can you imagine living like that? Right? But there are things that can be done to
alter. The addictions that we talk about regularly on the show are many. And they go from the incredibly harmful ones to the more acceptable ones like food addictions and there's gambling, there's sex, there's a myriad of addictions. I appreciate everything you guys are saying about why people get addicted, but I really want to keep today's show in a place that talks about what steps we can take to get the kind of help we need for young people. One of the things I was going to ask you, Carol Ann, I've never taken anybody that's 17 to CARP. Do they take 17-year-olds, 16-year-olds?
At the time that I have taken, now the last time I took someone there was actually just a couple months ago. It was a woman that was, but she was in her 30s. And she was on the street, and I got a call from my friend that has a halfway house. And so I went to selfless service taking someone over there. But as far as a teenager, I don't know, Renia. I don't know.
Okay, because I thought of CARP recently to help somebody else. And first of all, I know firsthand that it's not a place you want to send a teenager, but I would have if I thought that they would take them, and I didn't think that they would take teenagers. So I will research that today and find out if they take somebody that's 16, 17 years old. But again, it isn't nice, and neither is it nice smacked into a mental institution to dry out. That's also not a very nice place to be, and there's very little counseling available and very little help available because they just want you to sober up before they want to deal with you. And I can see that side of the issue because if somebody's really messed up, they're not going to make a lot of sense. I get that. And they're going to be difficult to deal with. I get that as well. But again, I'm really concentrating today on young people. And let's face it, 13, 14, Renia, I talked to my boys last night about it. What?
I just wanted to mention that what has really developed quite a bit in our area, in the South Florida where we are, that there, you and I, think, have talked about this, there's many, many halfway houses and places for it doesn't matter your age. My friend does run a place that is, a lot of integrity. She really cares. But most of these places, as you probably already have talked about, are only about the money. And I can say that she's not. And I would definitely call her, Renie, and get back to you as far as teen, because she has teenagers at her home, at her, halfway house, and that's in Loxahatchee. So I will definitely find out more.
Please, let's find out about that because I need to be able to put that out for my listeners because this has actually turned into a problem. I have someone else that wants to come in. I'm going to bring them in. I think I know who this is. They might have something important to say. Hi, this is Renie. You're on Renie's Heart to Heart. Is this Elise?
Yes, it is. It is Elise.
Hi, sweetie.
Elise,
how are you?
I just want to thank you. I'm doing okay, and I just want to thank you for bringing this to people's attention because I had no idea how sick the system is for sick kids. And it's really sad. And, the person who was just speaking, the one thing that, in speaking, bringing it back down to the youth subject that I'd like to take of what she said was when she mentioned the genetic defect of the A1 dopamine and the predisposition. Well, she's so right on because yesterday that Inspirations place, which I really think they go above and beyond to try and help in a situation like this, they sent over a rabbi to our son, and I think there was a connection there. And so, you know, with what you said with the whole spiritual thing, it's kind of it's hitting a nerve with me, because our son had said the one thing that he didn't get while he was in that Baker Act scenario is that he didn't get any therapy. If they see you acting out in any way, they're so much harder on you, where they, like she said, these kids are taking drugs for a reason. They don't feel good, and I found that they only make the kids feel worse. Instead of helping them and getting them the therapy, they use it as a punishment. Okay, you're not being good. Well, you're not going to get your therapy. You're just going to sit here and do nothing, and that's another break in the system. You know, it's the complete opposite of what they're screaming out for help for, and it not only angers me, it saddens me, and there's going to be a lot more kids that are going to go through this and go through this broken system. And I heard CARP is not, I don't know, I heard something negative. I believe we looked into it, and I believe it was not an option for several reasons. The one word that I heard is that it's a lockdown, whatever that is.
I think it is a lockdown in the sense that people just can't come and go. But if you say you don't want to stay, they can't keep you. So in most cases, for a teenager who is in tremendous denial, it wouldn't work. But my other thing was, I didn't think that they took anybody under the age of 18. But I'm going to find that out today. And I do appreciate, Carol Ann, your offer to get in touch. I do know this person you're talking about. You've spoken to me about this person before. And I think that would be great if you could even have them call me. Maybe I can intervene there and do something to help. Of course, Shelley is doing has done a big study in regard to addictions, and she's very knowledgeable about the addictions. However, my biggest concern right now is the fact that we have to figure out what can be done. You know, years ago, I took one of my kids out of a crack house and kept them with me for 2 weeks, took them to work with me, made them sleep beside me, everything, for 2 weeks to get them clean and sober. But they were okay with that because they wanted my help. If they don't want your help, if they think there isn't a problem, it changes the whole scenario. And very sadly, that's what I see in a lot of young guys, the inability to see the problem because they think they're in control. And, I mean, I see that in grown-ups, too. Don't get me wrong. I see that in a lot of grown-ups. But I'm talking about kids where mom and dad are responsible. You know, if your 17-year-old kid goes out and robs a bank or does something horrible like that, you're responsible for them. What hurts me about this scenario is that if you're saying, somebody please help me, I can't do this by myself, and there is no legitimate help. And right, you don't want to get your kids tied down in some uncaring place where, you know, there's no care. It's not what we're looking for.
Hey, Rainey, there's a website. I don't know what kind of information you'll find on it, and you may have already gone on it. But remember I told you I went to that Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office function the other day. I picked up a bunch of pamphlets and stuff. One of them has a couple of resources in the back, and it's about keeping your kids drug-free and that kind of thing. On the back it said you can visit the website www.findtreatment.samhsa.gov for information for treatment centers in your area. So I don't know if these are government treatment centers, but it's a government site. Now, a lot of times they have free centers. They have, you know, they just give you a laundry list of different centers, and then you look for different criteria. Have you ever heard of that site?
No, I have not. And this weekend I perused the Google and Bing and all of them to try to find things. And I must tell you, the one that comes up continuously, no matter how far down the list I go, is Inspirations. And which means that they have a smart web designer. It doesn't mean much else. But it's
right.
Couldn't find. And sometimes people came on the chat, I don't know what you call it, when they can click on and say, I'm here, my name is Mary. If you want to talk to me about your problem, please call in or click the chat. And I didn't because this is someone else's private. I didn't want to discuss it like I had the authority to. So, but I do think that there are some available. But no matter who I talked to or no matter what I read, they didn't say that you could go into a rehab center unless you're clean and sober.
I'll send you this website. There's also a phone number. The website. For people who are listening, in case this is something that, like I said, I don't know what you'll find on it, but I'll say the name. It's www.findtreatment.sam. It's S-A-M, like sugar, apple, Mary, Howard, Sam, apple, .gov. So that's S-A-M-H-S-A.gov, findtreatment.sam. S-A-M-H-S-A.gov. And then there's also a phone number, National Clearinghouse for Alcohol and Drug Information. So this is a nationwide number. Again, I don't know what you'll find, but it's 800-788-2800. So maybe one of those resources will produce something. I can also make a call for you today, Rainey, to the woman that I was involved in this addictionology course with, because she is aware of some of the centers in South Florida. I'm curious as to whether or not she knows any that take teenagers and that help someone who is not clean and sober yet to get clean and sober. I'll ask her if she knows of any centers like that, because this is more her field than mine. So I can make that call as well.
That's one of the best things that could come out of this show today, is if we could find a place like this. Because here's the truth. You got a 16- or a 17-year-old kid, and you finally convinced them that it's not all right to party their weekend away and not remember what happened. You finally convinced them of that. You've got them ready to go someplace and get some help. That's when you got to do it. You can't be screwing around with it, because then someone else, something flies into their head and they are gone.
You're absolutely right about that. In fact, that's one of the things they talked about in the in a lot of the literature, is that once you get them in that moment with their receptive, you have to be ready to act immediately, because even an hour later, they'll be back entrenched in their previous mindset. So the moment you get any sort of cooperation from them, you have to act on it immediately. So you're absolutely right about that.
Well, Carol Ann, if you could reach out to your friend and give her my my house number and my cell number, I would love to hear from her, and I can give some more information to that I'm trying to help. And
I'm thinking about an addictionologist that I heard about in Boca. I'm going to go look up his number and just see if I don't know if you're going to have a link on this show, but I'd like to send it out to a few people that can possibly help. But someone along the line, several minutes ago, said this is a business, and it really is. They slam you at these places, whether they're here in the States or out of the States, to get you. There's a lot of money involved. Insurance pays for a great deal of this. They have upfront money And it's a big sales pitch, and it's that's another crazy thing. I mean, we actually we had our son in the Baker Act, and they were already calling a place, had called, and was saying, the parents say that it's okay, the child's going to be released to us. I get a phone call, is this true? I said, absolutely not. And that was right here in West Palm Beach. It was the Palm Beach Institute had called over to the hospital, the Columbia Hospital, saying, we're going to be the place where he's going to come have his rehab. And so, you know, you have to be very, very careful. It's trenchy waters out there, murky waters. And,
wow,
you know, it's a big business.
Did you get that? Girls, did you just hear what she just said?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yes, I heard it loud and clear.
Oh, my God.
I know it all too well. Believe me, I know it all too well. I don't talk about this too much, but I'm very involved in this, you know, recovery for people, and the thing is that's why I'm saying, you know, Elisa is correct. It is a huge, you know, whenever Mr. Green money gets involved, it's not about recovery. It's about making money off of that person. It's a terrible situation. But there are people, and my friend is one, that has a very stable, very caring place that women can recover in. It's actually quite lovely. It's beautiful. So, you know, and she runs a tight ship, you know, and that's a good thing.
Well, don't you, I mean, you know, there's a lot of old adages, you know, you get more bees with honey, you know, sugar helps the medicine go down. I mean, I know I'm a mother from the beginning to the end. I get that. But I also can be a real bitch. And the point of fact is you really do get a young person's attention, a lot more just attention with love than anything else. And nobody can do anything different. So when somebody is treated like, you know, you put them someplace and you've convinced them as a mom or a dad that these people are going to help them, and they're crying and they're reaching out, and everybody looks at them and says, oh, well, you think you're a big shot. You want to go out and do this, and you want to go out and do that, and now you're paying the price. That may be the attitude. And, I mean, I've seen that in hospitals, for Lord's sakes. And that's why I said in the article that I wrote, are these people being treated different because it's self-inflicted? Is that the reason? Because you got yourself here of your own volition? Well, let me tell you something.
The only thing... Okay.
Go ahead.
The only thing that I need to add to this, and there is, I mean, absolutely, compassion is huge. And as I mentioned earlier, a spiritual, you know, education of sorts, and I'm not sure that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But I will say that addicts and alcoholics are extremely, you know, they're very, very, they're very good at, you know, doing their deal too. So you can't let them win, you know, they, with all your sweet compassion and kindness, some people actually need a little more direct, like, in your face, this isn't going to work. Still being, you know, don't take my kindness for weakness is what my friend who runs this home says, because she is very kind. But if you let them run the show, then that's not going to work out either. So I'm just saying there is that part of it where alcoholics and addicts can be, you know, pretty good at, you know, being deceptive. Because they want that next thing to fix that brain chemistry, like Shelley's talked about, you know. So even, you know, there's times, and like Shelley said, the moment they want to get well, you've got to go with that, because then the next thought might be, not today, you know. I'm going to do this one more day. I'm going to really, you know, whatever. I've seen it all too often. But I just think that, you know, compassion is absolutely in order. And at the same time, there are people that need a little bit more direct, not being mean or nasty or talking down to someone, but being very direct. That these are the rules. This is what's going to help you. You know what I'm saying? Oh. I mean, as far as the professionals go, so.
Never be a pushover with somebody who's got an addiction. Absolutely, positively, you're right. Absolutely. But, you know, and you know I say this because you've been a big part of my life for several years now. There's no need to be able to make a point and hurt somebody while you're doing it. There is no need for that.
Yep, I agree.
There is always a way to speak to somebody so that they know you care, but you're not some pushover. And
say what you mean, but don't say it mean.
That's right. Exactly. I love that saying. Say what you mean, but don't say it mean. And it goes a long way because people want to be helped. People want to be cared about. And it's a fact of life. And if you treat somebody indifferently, they feel that they are indifferent. They feel that they're nobody. And that doesn't serve the purpose of getting them off of any kind of addiction. They have to love themselves. They have to care about themselves. They're ever going to get there is if they know other people care about them too.
That's correct.
So I think I love the information we got today. And I'm so glad Elise called in, and I'm so glad to hear from you, Carol Ann, because I do know that you, through your lifetime, have dealt with many of these kind of things, and you are a it's wonderful that you're using those times in your life to be able to help someone else. That's a beautiful thing, and that's what we all should do. And, of course, Shell, my little book of knowledge there in the corner, she's like I said, she studied this and helped somebody who does this kind of work, so she did a lot of research on this, so this is kind of her forte. So where do we go next, girls? Are we going to, if Carol Ann can get us some information from this friend of hers that's doing this, and if Shelley, you'll call, are you talking about Adabella? Shell? No, I lost Shelley again. She and I live the closest, and we have the worst time staying connected here. Are you there?
I know. I've lost four times, but I'm hearing everybody.
Okay. Hey, Renee, I lost you guys from my home office line as well. I had to call back in on my cell phone.
Ah. Okay.
Yeah, it's like the connection's not staying stuck very long for some reason. I don't get that. Well, it's technology today. Good grief, there's too much of it.
Too much out there. It's been a weird weekend for cell phones and even cable connections and stuff like that on TVs and everything. It might even have something to do with the strange weather. But
and by the way, yes, I am talking about Adabella.
Okay. So if you can get some information from Adabella, and if Carol Ann get some information from her friend here in Loxahatchee, if you guys will pass on that information to me, and I will share it with the people that I'm trying to help. And Elise, I love that you called today, and I love your input. And I think that together, maybe we can make some changes in this. Maybe we can make people understand the worth of knowing that when a teenager, in particular, teenagers more so than adults, make up their mind that they need help, that's when we have to help them, not
Renee,
2 days.
There is one comment I'd like to make. Renee, can you hear me?
I do.
Yeah. One of the comments I wanted to make real quick was in response to what you just said with regard to compassion. One of the things that they talked about in the course, which, again, I never thought of, is that if you find out that somebody has diabetes or heart disease or cancer, you instantly feel compassion for them. Even though in many cases these things are brought on by lifestyle choices, it's still a physical disease and people feel compassion. There's no difference with drug addiction and alcoholism and all these other addictions. They're a physiological disease. It's not because the person has no willpower. It's because they have a predisposition and different factors in their life have psychologically put them in a place now to be vulnerable to that. Okay? That doesn't make it okay, but it explains it. It doesn't make that person a bad person. So the lack of compassion, this is very much a disease like any of the others I just mentioned. Addictions, cancer, diabetes, they're all diseases of the physical body that allow it to break down in one way or another. The problem with addictions is that it affects the person's functioning. It affects their ability to reason life out, so they make bad choices. They do criminal behavior, things like that. So now society is looking down on people. But if you went to the root cause and realized the root cause was a physiological disease, then you would be inspired to feel compassion regardless of whether or not that person stole money to buy drugs with or something like that, because you would understand it had less to do with a moral fiber and more to do with something that they were combating that you are not combating. You know, so it's,
exactly.
You get the whole there but for the grace of God, go I type of attitude. Maybe if I had that defect, I would have done the same thing. And there is help, but CA made a good point, Carol Ann made a good point, is that you have to get the brain chemistry balanced. There are ways to do that, but you have to get them clean first, and that's what you're trying to do, Renee. Let's get them clean first and then look at those solutions to keep them clean.
Right. And everybody needs moral support. Everybody needs something that is bigger than they are that they can lean on. And until they become adults, it's usually mommy and daddy. And the problem here is that mommy and daddies don't get a whole bunch of training about this kind of thing. They get training about teaching them not to wear a diaper and how to eat with a fork and a knife and how to shake hands with the gentleman that comes to their house and all those kind of things. We get it. But when something like this happens to our child, and it's happened to many, many of us as parents, and grandparents, then there needs to be more understanding and more help. I must tell you that when we talk about training and the different schools and the techniques from different teachers and the people that go the extra mile and the people that don't, we talk about it very loosely that there should be better training, but sometimes there is no opportunity and there is no alert to the fact that you may need to know these things. The truth of the matter is that there will always be addictions. There will always be family dynamic problems, always, because we are all so different. And addictions make us even more different. They alter who we are inside. So we will always need to know how to deal with this and what steps to take. So it's important that, governmentally speaking, that there's things set up that are cut and dried, black and white, if you will, so that we know which path to take and how to get there. There can be a million places, but there has to be a procedure in place that teaches a family, oh, your 16-year-old, you know that your 16-year-old has been doing ecstasy all weekend, get him over here, let's see what's going on, we've got some stuff that will help flush him out. That's what we need to do. Not, oh, well, you know, you could give me $5,000, and if you got good insurance, what kind of insurance do you have? They want to discuss all that before they say anything. If you take a 60-year-old man to the hospital and he can't breathe and they listen to his heart and they know he's having a heart attack, they take care of him then and there, then and there. And this is the same kind of thing that has to happen with the drug addiction. We have
right.
to do it then and there, not next week. Not when you figure out what you want to do with them because you want to know how much money we have. We have to do it now.
Right.
We are out of time. I want to thank all of you. I am so glad that everybody that called in had so much wonderful input to give. I hope this helped whoever needed this kind of help today. And I want to thank you all. Bless you and have a great, great Monday.
You're welcome.
Say again, honey.
I just said bless you for all that you do for everyone. Absolutely.
Yeah, I second that.
Thank you. But it's, you know, teamwork is the best way to do anything. Doing something all by yourself, you have a hell of a time reaching all the corners of the field. So teamwork is the best way to do it. So thank you, girls. And let's hope that we can move some of these things forward and help the people that need our help. God bless and have a great day, and we'll be back tomorrow morning. Love you. Bye-bye, everybody.
Love you, too. Together,
love you too,
everyone.
Rain.
Together,
have a great
everyone.
Day, ladies.
Use more.
Bye-bye.
I'll try to talk to you.